For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. The band is back together after a couple nights of some diminished returns, as we'd say, when it comes to the post-game show.
We went with the duets, right? We went, me and you, Drew, for one show, and then we did Dave and you for the other show. So we just reduced it by one and had a little different look for everybody.
It's true. I think it's clear, though, who the core member of the team is, obviously, over the last couple of nights of post-game shows.
Yeah, Dave.
I knew that was coming. If you have a tow truck, if you can please send it to Ezra's house to boost his car for him, that would be helpful for everybody involved on this Saturday morning. So anybody with a tow truck that may be listening to us, head over to Ezzy's house and boost his car for him, please.
Yeah, well, I'm a CAA member, but the thing is, I used up all my CAA. You only get a certain amount of service calls, right? Like,
yes,
my car has had to be boosted, I would say, at least six times this winter. And obviously, I didn't plug my car in. So right before I'm about to go to Dave M's house, which is obviously here in River Heights, so it's not a long drive, you know, Naomi says, I hope you plugged your car in last night. Obviously, I didn't. So it didn't start, but it's okay, you know, doing the show from home. But I only have myself to blame for that. So, I mean, it's just been one of those winters where, you know, if you don't plug in your car, it's not going to start because it was minus 100 last night.
I would tend to agree with Trevor Red Ranger, who says, time for a new battery, dude. And I think you might want to look into that.
Yeah, Sentra might need a new battery. It's a 2014 or 2013, and I'm not really sure when the last time the battery was changed. So
which means never.
Never.
Yeah, no question about it.
Before we go, though, let's give Lorna a happy birthday shout-out from Illegal Curve.
Happy 78 years young, Lorna.
Yeah, happy birthday, Lorna.
She's spending her birthday with Illegal Curve. The least we can do is wish her a happy birthday. Many, many more. Nothing but good health from Illegal Curve. So wishing you all the best, Lorna.
Exactly. You know, so thank you for joining us this Saturday morning to Lorna and to everybody else. We're here live talking about the Winnipeg Jets, of course, as we do each and every Saturday morning. If you're new here, welcome. Smash the like button. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, do all those little things that we ask of you each and every time we go live here on our YouTube channel. And I would tend to agree with Mr. Rob, who says time to listen to Naomi. Yes, she's usually puts you on the straight and narrow path, Mr. Ginsberg. So Naomi might say it might be time to invest in a new car battery. They tend to be relatively inexpensive, so you should probably look into that. All things considered, when it comes to car repair, it is one of the least expensive investments you're going to make. So yeah, might need a new battery heading over there. They're big boy.
But I think we need a new sponsor is what we need.
That's a separate issue altogether, but I appreciate the humor in it nonetheless. No humor in last night's Winnipeg Jets game. Well, I mean, unless you're the gallows humor type. The Jets dropping a 5-2 decision to the New York Islanders, in a game that the Jets really needed, both teams on the second halves of back-to-back, and the Jets had an opportunity last night with a good performance and a good result to move within 3 points of the playoffs. And what you saw last night was nothing of the sorts, nothing that was even remotely close to what I would describe as a good effort. The better of the two teams won, and they won handily, and they were full marks for their victory, the New York Islanders, whereas the Winnipeg Jets just did not seem to have any pep to their step from the start of the game all the way through the final buzzer.
Yeah, and, you know, I obviously wasn't on the post-game show with you guys yesterday. I had a family night, so I was only catching a little bit of the game live, so obviously I watched the replay, so I have to get that in there right off the bat. I wasn't watching the game real time, but from what I watched, I did see the Kyle Connor goal live, which was obviously, you know, Ryan Pulock has the shot on net and then he blows a tire. Pionk gets the pass up to Ehlers, and we know what happened there with Connor just scoring his 36th of the year. But, you know, just watching the replay and seeing what the shots were, in the first period. I mean, it was not a good effort for the Jets, and I think they were lucky, you know, to get out of that period without giving up more goals, right? So, you know, from what I saw, three of the four goals were off of rebounds, right? And even the Brock Nelson power play goal, there was a rebound, and then Andrew Kopp had trouble, you know, clearing the puck, right? So again, I didn't watch the whole game, but just based on watching, you know, the goals minus the empty netter, I mean, just too loose defensively. And obviously giving up two goals in 50 seconds in the second period is killer, guys. But, you know, the third goal that Islanders scored, which turned out to be the game winner, I mean, it's just way too loose and passive in your own zone. Like, just too many guys, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Kyle Connor standing around in their own zone, like Schmidt and Stanley. You know, there was a little bit of miscommunication there, just not being, you know, sharp in front of your own net, right? So, I mean, I don't know how many of these goals you blame on Hellebuck. I realize, you know, a lot of people in the chat already this morning, you know, talking about Comrie getting the second start in a row. I mean, Dave, even though Comrie started a couple games in a row many times before in the AHL, I just don't, based on precedent, I just didn't see that happening. I think we all expected, you know, Dave Lowry to go back to Hellebuck. So, you know, based on what I saw, which was limited live, and then watching the highlights after, which is obviously, you know, a little bit painful knowing that the Jets lost the game 5-2, I don't think goaltending was the issue. I just think the Jets weren't sharp enough defensively, and obviously they didn't get enough offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only curious goaltending decision really was the fact that he went with Comrie against New Jersey, and there's factors for it. And Eric Comrie was interesting in his response in the post game, said he knew a week ago he was getting that game as opposed to, you know, maybe a day or two in advance. So it wasn't a surprise to the Jets goaltending group. They obviously have a plan of attack for the schedule, and it was set out. So, I would never have expected Eric Comrie to get back-to-back games. I don't care how good he was playing. I mean, it would be very unusual for that to happen. And you're right, Ezzie. Look, the rebounds were juicy that Connor Hellebuck gave up, but that's the reason why you have defensemen, right? Defensemen are actually supposed to be able to box out the opposition's forward. And how many of those goals resulted because they weren't properly boxing out, or they weren't properly taking their man? And as you said, guys were standing around watching. Well, if you're just standing around watching, there's probably someone moving who's going to get to that loose puck. And that's what happened. And as a result, you found yourself two goals in 50 seconds. One, giving up one goal early in the period, like, is what it is. It is what it is. You know, you got a goal early in the third period, right? So, you know, teams can get that kind of bounce, that opportunity, sure. But knowing how important that game was for the Jets, to give up a goal 48 seconds after they allowed the Islanders to take the lead, not playing tight defensively, that's the part that's, like, mind-boggling to me. Mm-hmm. Is that it? You know, it's, how does the coaching staff, I don't even care if you don't use your time out there, because it's not really a panic situation going down 2-1. But you got to, like, send your most defensively responsible unit out. You have to get these guys, like, you have to tighten it up. Because the last thing you need, that's a dagger. And as Drew and I talked about last night on the show, when the Islanders went up 3-1, it didn't seem likely, as I talked about this, how back in the day when you and I would be at the arena watching a Jets game and they'd go down 3-1 in the third period, you're like, this team's good enough, they'll come back. That feeling isn't there this year. It's just not there.
So, especially against the team with the structure and the, you know, drink, if you're playing a drink, an illegal curve drinking game, the attention to detail of the New York Islanders. I mean, the New York Islanders are, you know, they have their game plan. They know how they want their game to look. They know that it starts within their own zone and starts on their own side of the ice first, and everything builds upon that. So when you go down 3-1 to a team like the Islanders, Dave, I think, yeah, to your point, is that, you know, you are playing right into their hands, because they don't engage in track meets. They don't engage in a loose structure that the Jets might be able to take advantage of. They're going to grind you into pulp when they get a lead. Even though their record isn't that great this season, they still have their modus operandi, and they know it top to bottom.
Right. And as opposed to going down two goals to the Devils, who have, you know, the youngest team in the league, Nico Daws in net. I mean, Nico Daws, I'm not taking anything away from him. He's a really good young goalie. We talked about that a few nights back. But, I mean, this Islanders team is the opposite. It's a veteran team, right? Like, look who got the goals yesterday. Nelson, Lee, Clutterbuck. I mean, they have some young players, obviously. Noah Dobson, Matt Barzell's pretty young. I mean, there's Oliver Wahlstrom. Like, we know this Islanders team has their collection of young players, but not as young as the Devils. And you're right. And, you know, I thought it was – pretty funny listening to Josh Morrissey talk about structure after the game, because that's what's lacking in the Jets game, right? Like the Jets are healthy now. There's no more excuses here. You know, we've talked about it. They're just running out of time here. There's just not that many games left. And, you know, you mentioned that the Jets had an opportunity to climb within, you know, what was it, 2 points or
3 points.
3 points of Dallas, but Dallas has three games in hand.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to mention that there, that obviously, yeah, Dallas has the edge there. And I think Nashville also has two games in hand, right? So, I mean, look, this was a wasted opportunity. And yeah, it was the second game of a back-to-back, but the Islanders were also in the second game of a back-to-back. So there was no advantage for the Islanders. Instead, aside from, pardon me, you know, obviously playing at home, and the Islanders have been playing well, even though they're not going to make the playoffs. But I mean, it's just not good enough of a performance when your season is on the line. And, you know, yeah, you get it. Connor gets a nice goal, but like, where would this team be, guys, without Connor and Ehlers? Like, they're providing the majority of the offense. Like, yes, Adam Lowry, we got to give him credit. You know, he went on a nice goal scoring streak. Couldn't continue it yesterday, obviously. So, you know, he's putting the puck in the net. There's other guys, like they got a goal from Brendan Dillon against the Devils. So it's not like they're not getting goals from other players, but really Connor and Ehlers are the ones that are really, you know, driving this bus. And, you know, sure, Wheeler, he gets the goal, give him credit, you know, rebound. I mean, it was just Johnny on the spot type of goal, but it's just not enough. It's an effort that's incomplete, which has been the story of, you know, the majority of the season, where you see the Jets play maybe one good period, maybe a couple good periods, and, you know, two goals in 50 seconds against the Islanders. I mean, that's all she wrote.
And, you know, well, you know, just to quickly jump in, because we did have a reader send us an email. He said, look, Connor Hellebuyck isn't playing great, but before you guys all pile on him, you know, the Jets haven't been scoring 30 games this season already. They've scored two goals. And it's funny because I look, and if you remove the Tampa Bay game and the Montreal game where they scored 15 goals and moved them up to about 15th overall in the NHL in terms of goal scoring, the Jets, so like the Jets aren't getting enough goals. We know that. The Jets aren't playing structurally sound defensively. We know that. And Connor Hellebuyck isn't stealing games. So that's a recipe for mediocrity. And that's exactly what this team has become. And that's why you are where you are. And you're, you know, what's the line? You are what your record says you are. Mm-hmm. And right now, the Jets are what their record says. As he says, as he's right. You know, it's the most cliche. I mean, hockey's full of cliches, but, you know, it takes 60 minutes to play a hockey game. Well, what have we seen from the Jets so far many times this season? Lapses in Drew's attention to detail. And because of that, you know, you have a game where you have a nice comfortable lead against, not comfortable, but you have a lead against Pittsburgh, you have a brain fart, and suddenly it's a tie game. You have a tie game in the game, you know, against the Islanders last night. You probably shouldn't be tied in. Mm-hmm. And yet a brain, you know, two mistakes end up in the back of your net within a minute, and it's just in the early in the second period. So that's the problem with this Jets team, right? In a nutshell. You don't blame it all on 37, because 37 isn't being, he's not his Vezina caliber. There's no question about it. His GSAA is still pretty good. I think he's still top 10 in goals saved above expected, but which is a good number. But at the same time, like I said, what has he given up? Four or five or six goals in almost all of his last five or six games. So
yeah, more goals, I think, in five consecutive games now. It might even be six consecutive games now.
And I'm just saying that the problem is it's a lot of different things, right? So you got the goaltending isn't perfect. The defense is definitely, I mean, how many goals would you want to go through last night where you saw just guys standing around allowing guys to get to the loose puck? And then, again, if you don't score goals, it's very hard to win. Doesn't matter how good your goaltender is if you don't score a goal.
Well, you know, to me, you know, we talked about it last night. You know, it's one all after 20 minutes. And frankly, the Jets are fortunate that it's one all after 20 minutes because they were badly outplayed in the first period. The only, you know, real quality chance they had was the goal that Connor scored because of a absolute just sort of a disaster by the Islanders. Anytime that you get a 2-on-0 with Ehlers and Connor, it's just a disaster has happened for the defensive team. And so you'd think that being tied at one all after 20 minutes might give the Jets a little bit of a boost to play better. We sort of saw that on Thursday against the Devils, where they're up 2-1 after 40 minutes. They don't really deserve to be up 2-1 because the Devils, I think most people would say, had probably played better, but then the Jets come out and they dominate the third period. What happens yesterday? They're fortunate to be tied at 1-1 after the 20. And in 50 seconds in the second period, the game's over. It's like the Jets continued to sleepwalk through the game because they thought that they could just, you know, turn it on or sort of get fluky goals or fluky opportunities. Well, that doesn't work. That's not a recipe for success. I'll be perfectly honest. I was expecting from the second period on yesterday to see a much better Winnipeg Jets effort because they were fortunate to be tied 1-1 after 20. It didn't happen. It didn't materialize. They were outplayed for the vast majority of the 60 minutes of last night's game. Look, they were only down a goal 20 seconds into the third period. It was 3-2 with 20 minutes still to play. Where was the push? Where was the, okay, we are sort of fortunate to be at this point. Let's go steal a game. Let's go steal a win that we don't necessarily deserve. It wasn't there. And that to me, especially because they're the more desperate of the two teams. I mean, the Jets are the only of the two teams last night. The Jets are the only ones with a sniff, albeit small, of the playoffs. And yet you never saw that pushback throughout the entirety of that game. It was just laps after laps after blown coverage after blown coverage. That was really, I think, quite troubling for the Winnipeg Jets last night.
Yeah, and that's no different than things that we've seen all season long, really, with the exception of, I mean, recent memory, obviously, you know, the last few weeks. But I would say going back the last few months, I mean, we've talked about it. The Jets have lost many games to teams that are below them in the standings, and then they've defeated teams that are above them in the standings, right? Like, we just saw that at home with Tampa Bay, right? So where was, you know, that ability to finish off a team that you saw against Tampa Bay, that you saw against the Devils, right? So it's a really disappointing win. And obviously, you know, even if the Jets won last night, guys, it would have been tough to still make the playoffs. We talked about it. Like, yes, they don't have the advantage. Like, they now have played more games than other teams that are ahead of them in the standings, right? So they don't have that advantage in that sense. They're still at the mercy of other teams, hoping that those teams would lose, right? But they're still in it. And, you know, with the trade deadline coming up in 9 days, I know you want to get into that later, Drew. I mean, it's kind of the worst position that you want to be in, I think, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, right? Because just barely in the playoff race.
But they're not. I mean, look, I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff, whatever he said to Pierre LeBrun in that interview in The Athletic, you know, you might have to parrot that line for a little while longer. But if he truly thinks that this team is in the playoff race or anything but, you know, basically four games and done if they somehow miraculously squeak in against the Avalanche, then he is fooling himself and he's doing a grave disservice to this team. This team needs to be a seller between now and next Monday, and I do not entertain any arguments for any other approach. If you re-sign Paul Stastny between now and next Monday, fine. If you re-sign Andrew Copp between now and next Monday, fine. I mean, I don't foresee that happening.
That'd be great for us.
Well, it would be good content for us, certainly. I don't foresee that happening at all. I think that would be a pipe dream and a long shot, a long, long, long shot at the very best. But, you know, you have to have the for sale sign. You have to, you know what you want for your pending UFAs and anybody else, frankly, on this roster that might garner some interest.
I agree with you in that sense. I just, sorry, Dave, wanted to say, like, this, we talk about this every year, right? We've been doing the show for so long, the sellers and buyers, like, If you trade two guys, does that make you a seller? Like, I just think it's funny because the Jets aren't sellers in the same sense as a team like Montreal, for example. Well,
but they're selling. They're trading their UFA.
Oh no, I get it. I get it. Don't get me wrong, Drew. I get it that you're trading players as opposed to acquiring players because you're not going to be a playoff team. I'm just saying I find it funny because the Jets aren't really your, I guess what you would say is your traditional type of seller.
Well, sure. Anyways, I was going to interject quickly was the fact that, you know, the reality for whenever you hear Kevin Cheveldayoff speak and he's having conversations, and they're always having conversations, is the fact that, you know,
conversations work two ways and they go backwards and forwards. I pick up the phone and then somebody else picks up the phone.
Anyway, so the point is,
I dial a number and then the numbers are dialed on the other end.
Yes. So anyway, so the point is, thank you, Drew, for making my point. What I was trying to say, though, is that I just think he's just trying to keep the market up for those guys. If he comes out and says, oh, yeah, the for sale sign's up, then maybe it drives, you know, a fourth round pick becomes a fifth round pick from a team that thinks the Jets. Well, I mean, there's a little bit of element of that, I think. I mean, you have to have a bit of gamesmanship when it comes to, you know, your approach in terms of selling of your assets. Murat wrote a really good article in The Athletic today talking about different teams that might be interested. Let's be realistic, guys. Like if Andrew Copp and Paul Stastny are both with the Winnipeg Jets, given the fact that in both Murat's pieces, one about Copp the other day, today about Stastny, he talked about offseason plans, and he said from what he understands, what The Athletic knows, neither player sees the Jets in their plans for this summer. Okay, so to your point, Drew, do you think that you're going to be able to be good enough to make some noise if you retain them? Or, you know what, do you do what the St. Louis Blues did in 2018? Are you willing to trade a Paul Stastny to a Winnipeg Jets who are going to, quote, go for it? By the way, all I can think about in the last few days, I know it's totally off topic, is how big a mistake did the Jets make by not acquiring Mark Stone? Like, it's just like, you look at how bad Vegas.
I don't even know if that was even a reality.
It was 100%. Like Pierre Dorion was here like every single day. I saw him at every single Moose game. I mean, I just think Kevin Cheval day off balked at the price. And I mean, I think there's an element of, if he wasn't up against McCrimmon, who already had that really good relationship with Stone, and they probably already had a deal in place. I think that there's, you know, but I all you think about is how good Mark Stone is, how good he would be in a Winnipeg Jets jersey, how good, you know, he is in terms of, look at Vegas. They've lost what, 8 of 12 games without him in the lineup. So I mean, they've sunk like a stone. But the point,
well done,
thank you. So I just think that it becomes I don't know why, it's just been in my brain the last few days, just thinking what would this team look like with him in the lineup. Anyways, but going back to the idea of, look what the Blues did. The Blues sold assets. They didn't have to, like, you don't brand it as like the Rangers were willing to say, we're going to do a rebrand. We're going to, you know, reset this whole thing. The Jets could do a small retool. You acquire some assets. You've got good players. Like I said, Andrew Kopp is going to cost you $5 million. I like Andrew Kopp as a player. He is not worth $5 million. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he proves, you know, down the line when he's playing for the Detroit Red Wings or the Boston Bruins and he signed.
Well, that's just it though, Dave. Sorry. I was just going to say, is he worth that on this team?
No, he's not.
Right.
And again, like I said, you can throw David Gustafson, who I think is an Andrew Kopp light, will eventually get there defensively just as responsible. You know, I think you can give him that role, you know, maybe give him this for the rest of this year to get that spot. Him beside Adam Lowry, that's a really good start to a really solid third line. And so, like I said, you know, there's options on the Moose that can be given. And like I said, David Gustafson is not going to cost you $5 million next year. Now, if you can get Andrew Kopp signed to a reasonable somewhere in the fours, but you're not going to. I mean, it already sounds like it's done. So if that's the case, you have to acquire. Now, are you going to get a second for him? I don't think you're getting a first.
Well, let me stop. Okay, I'll tell you what. Hold that thought. Sean Reynolds is going to join us in a couple minutes, hopefully, as well. I want to talk about that because you look at what Nick Foligno got last year, you know, what he went for. And he went for a first-round pick. I don't know why Andrew Kopp, you know, all this talk is immediately around, well, only a second or only maybe a second and a third for Andrew Kopp.
Well, sometimes a Tampa Bay first is essentially like a Montreal second, right? So, I mean, first and seconds can always be relative based on which team you're trading with.
Well, right. But any team that's acquiring them
is giving an upper echelon team. So it's going to be a late first. I mean, you get a late first for him. I'm not saying it's impossible. I think he definitely helps. Anyways, we'll talk about it after the break.
Okay, let's go to break. When we come back, Rennie's going to join us, Sean Reynolds. All your comments, they're flying fast and furious in the chat. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe to the podcast. It's a Saturday morning. You're spending it with your usual friends, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be right back. Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a bright and beautiful Saturday morning, made even more brighter and even more beautiful by our next guest from Sportsnet. You know him as Rennie, as our good friend, Sean Reynolds. Good morning, Sean. How are you, sir?
I'm good. And I know what you're trying to do, Drew. You're trying to butter me up, but I made sure that I dressed like your slacker teenage son for the show.
Because
I knew you'd love that.
It was too easy. You got, you know, you got a big guest in Sheldon Kennedy on the long form edition of Kenny and Rennie. You know, Ken dresses up like he's, you know, getting ready for his wedding or something, you know, all suited up, and Sheldon always looks dapper. And then there's you. I mean, I'm glad your hat wasn't backwards. I suppose that's the big victory in there. You're wearing a t-shirt with a clown on it. You know, I thought you looked good. I don't know. As a guy who has basically only worn t-shirts for the past 2 years, by the way, happy COVID anniversary, everybody. 2 years ago today, the whole thing started here in Winnipeg and, of course, all around the world. I just thought it was a very good juxtaposition between what was going on between you and Kenny and Sheldon and Sheldon Kennedy. Great interview, by the way, guys. Just tremendous.
Yeah, we love it.
Thank you.
Go check out the Kenny and Rennie YouTube channel for that.
Yeah, yeah, it was, you know what, there's a running theme with Ken and my relationship together is Ken kind of, you know, subverting me from the background, right? Taking my knees out every once in a while. And that was one of those days. Like, I mean, when does Ken wear a suit? I think you guys would admit, usually I'm the overdressed one in the room, right?
Well, you're
and
the
I
big
take a little
TV
break
star.
From that, and Ken took his opportunity to make it. So now, and you helped them. Now I've been defined as the slacker who doesn't dress properly or doesn't understand the importance of the moment. So thanks for that, Drew. You've hammered it home. I can wear suits from today until the day that I die, and people will think of me as that underdressed slacker. Thank you for that.
But look at the bright side. You're still got such a baby face and you're still young enough that you can pass for a teenager. There's something to be said for that, right?
I think you're, again, that's you buttering me up, but I appreciate it.
The ageless wonder, right, Sean?
That's right. The ageless wonder, indeed. Anyways, good morning, Mr. Sean. A million apologies for my faux pas.
I loved it. That's a new step in our relationship. When you can burn a guy like that, you look and you're like, oh, that's a good guy. It's a good friend of mine right there. Good.
The first rule of comedy is know your audience. So I knew that I could get away with something like that. Right, you know, speaking of knowing your audience or, you know, the comedy, I guess it would be the Winnipeg Jets play last night a little bit. A little bit harsh, but that's okay. Against if there were nothing, if not harsh here on the program against the New York Islanders, just, you know, every game's must win. So the must win cliche is certainly a little bit, but when you're playing on the second half of the back-to-back, both teams are, I expected more from the Winnipeg Jets. I expected a higher degree of desperation, particularly in the final 40 minutes of that contest. You know, to start the second period after you're tied up at 1:20, you're fortunate to be tied up after 1:20, and that's how you start the second period, to me, that's just, you know, just I think an emblematic of really the season we've seen from this Winnipeg Jets team, you know, through the entirety of the first, 59 games or so.
So correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was you, Drew, but it was one of you guys who'd said, and it was a couple of weeks back or something like that, that the Jets were an arrogant team. I think that was.
Sounds like
that's a Mandelism. No question
about it. Yeah. Now, yeah, makes sense because Drew's arrogant himself, so it makes sense that he said that.
He knows arrogance, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly, that's right.
Yeah, I know what you're getting at with that. The way that I put it yesterday when we were talking about this game is, I think the Jets buy into their own hype. And I'd said that in that there's specific examples that stick out to me. I remember last year there was one point when Kyle Connor was being interviewed about something, and he made a comment. He said, "We know we're good about the Jets." And I remembered it kind of struck weird because I didn't think they'd been playing that good of hockey, but they were playing the kind of hockey that we saw them play against the Devils the other night. That hockey where you really shouldn't have won the game, but you won the game because you're really skilled and you're really good offensively and you've got a really good goaltender who bails you out. So the ice can be tilted against you all night and you can still win games. And I think rather than the Jets in past times, and I think this is something, it's another thing that I rail about in the way that the coaching style of Paul Maurice, and it's continued with Dave Lowry, how you never hear them come out and call a spade and say, "We weren't good enough tonight. We should have done better." They're always saying, and you can go back through Paul Maurice. I think it's once or twice I saw Paul Maurice say, "We didn't do well enough tonight. We need to be better." They're always finding the positives and saying, "Oh yeah. Oh, we were down 3-0 to a team that, you know, is last in the standings. And we're one of the top 10 teams and we pulled it out." Well, that's stay in the fight. We're good at staying in the fight and we're good at kind of jumping back into games and playing our way back into games. And I'm kind of getting away from the original point here. But he said that in the offseason, Connor Hellebuyck said this team is on the verge of being a dynasty after getting destroyed by the Montreal Canadiens. And then I think that Tampa Bay game happened, and I think right away you'll notice there's a certain segment of Jets fans that are like, "That's it. Here we are. We're as good as Tampa Bay. Let's go. Here come the playoffs. Here comes the Stanley Cup." And I do think that the Jets think more like those fans that they think about than the discerning fans who are like, you still have a lot to show here. And then they walked from that game into New Jersey and win a game that they probably shouldn't have won in the old way, other than the fact that it was Eric Comrie in net, Connor Hellebuck in net, get bailed out by him, win with some extremely opportunistic scoring. And the most concerning thing, and you were touching on it, Drew, for me, is that they played that first period that was a continuation of the Devils game. They got worked by the New York Islanders in the first period. And to your point, they were lucky to be tied coming out of that. A really, really good, recognized, established team that can, you know, win in the playoffs or knows how to win would have said in that intermission, you know what, guys, we need to pick it up here. That was ridiculous. Let's start playing the right way. I think the Winnipeg Jets came out of that period and thought we've done this numerous times in the last couple of years. Let's do it again, boys. We don't need to put in our whole effort against these guys. We'll just, you know, get a 2-on-0 in the middle of a game where we were just getting absolutely destroyed, and we'll score on the one chance we get. We'll score on our first shot in 8 minutes, and then we'll go on and we'll win this game, right? There needed to be a recognition that what they did against New Jersey wasn't good enough, even though they got the 2 points, and what they did in the first period wasn't good enough against the Islanders. That recognition never came. They continued it in the second, and they lost the game in the first 2 minutes of that second period. Yes, they pushed afterwards. I give them that. Yes, I think they showed elements in the second and parts of the third period that are a really good team that is capable of doing this. But the problem with this Winnipeg Jets team is they don't raise their level often enough to be a playoff team. It's not that they're not good enough. It's not that they don't have enough skill. It's not that they don't have the personnel. This is a team that does not raise its level to the level of competitiveness that you need to have to be a playoff team. Not nearly often enough. And that's why they're where they are right now.
It's hard to disagree with that, Sean. And obviously, we want to ask you about the upcoming trade deadline. You know, spoiler alert, we might ask you about Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny. But I wanted to ask you about the goaltending, because you mentioned it. Eric Comrie was phenomenal. I agree with you against the Devils. Like, do you think Adam Lowry is considering going back to Comrie? We know that he beat St. Louis earlier this year when he was between the pipes. Like, do you reward him at this point, or do you maybe give Hellebuck the start against the Blues, and then you maybe wait to give Comrie the game against Vegas? And a second part of that question, do you think we see Ville Heinola in the game tomorrow against St. Louis?
So I think that if you were running this team based on merit, which Dave Lowry has come in and said that he's been trying to do, and we've seen examples of him doing that, Eric Comrie would get the next start. I mean, and I by no means am pinning last night's game on Connor Hellebuck. Connor Hellebuck made the saves. Lean on him and criticize the rebounds that he left. But the time that the players who scored the second and third goals in that game had, and the fourth goal in that game had, to put the puck in the net off those rebounds, was way too much time. The Jets weren't there defensively. I don't hang that loss last night on Connor Hellebuck. Seems like a lot of people are. I know that he's let in more than 4 goals in however many games. That's not what we've come to expect from him. Do I think Connor Hellebuck's playing his best hockey? No, but Connor Hellebuck, we can't blame the Jets being in the position they are on Connor Hellebuck not playing his best hockey, because the Jets have been a playoff team for a long time now, almost solely because Connor Hellebuck played his best hockey. This is a time where the team should have been picking him up if they felt like he was down. But that said, Eric Comrie has done everything he could possibly do this season to give this team a boost whenever he's been called upon. The Jets are way outside the playoff picture looking in. It's not looking good for them, but we wouldn't be talking about them having a chance at the playoffs right now if Eric Comrie had been a 500 goaltender. I mean, you're talking about taking, what, another 5 points away from them, and now they're not only 10 points out of the playoffs, but the closest team to them has 3 games in hand, potentially 16 points out of the playoffs. It would be over. We would not be talking about any possibility, as slim as it is right now, if it weren't for Eric Comrie. I think that needs to be rewarded. That said, what I've seen from this team, not once have I seen this season them make a decision based on Eric Comrie's going, let's give him the crease. So I think he should. I think this is probably the most obvious moment this season where it's like, this kid should be playing this next game. Whether that recognition is going to come or whether the Jets would act on that impulse, I haven't seen evidence that they will. So I don't expect him to play on Sunday, but I say that I think that he should be playing on Sunday. As for Ville Heinola, I mean, if you're looking for a shakeup, this is another one of these things. I had a little bit of a, we talked about it on the show last night, and I was surprised. It was a little bit of a beef between Ken and I. I was surprised his beef. Take on this. But I was really surprised that the Jets didn't pull the goalie again after that 5-2 score. They just let it go to a, and a lot of people were saying, well, what's the point in losing 6-2? But I was thinking to myself, if you go back, which game was that? The Minnesota Wild were down 4-1 against the team. They pulled the goalie with 8 minutes left, closed the gap to 4-3 by pulling the goaltender, got scored on two more times. And so they just kept pulling the goalie. And the message to me there is like, we need to do everything we can to win. That didn't happen. Like that attempt at lighting a spark didn't happen in the Jets game. And I really don't see what the value is in only losing 5-2 when this team has to get points, right? Well, that was an opportunity to light a spark that I didn't think was there. You talking, Ezzy, about putting Ville Heinola in is an opportunity to light a spark. It's an opportunity to throw a guy in there. There's Eric Comrie. Putting Eric Comrie in is an opportunity to light a spark. There just doesn't seem to have been a lot of those kind of thinking outside the Paul Maurice era box of let's do something a little bit drastic. Let's try something entirely different to see if we can get a bit of a different result. So if they went in that direction, I wouldn't be surprised because you shouldn't be surprised that a team would go to someone like Ville Heinola or Eric Comrie in a situation like this when this team is desperate and needs a spark. I just don't think we've seen enough evidence that the Jets conduct themselves in that manner.
Saturday morning, you're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sean Reynolds is our guest. You know Sean, of course, from his work with Sportsnet and Kenny and Rennie. Both us and Kenny and Rennie will have post-game shows tomorrow night after the Jets and the Blues. It'll be about, let's say, 8:30, 8:45 for us, and then maybe about 45 minutes or an hour after that for Kenny and Rennie tomorrow night.
Okay, well, Sean, 10 days from now, the Jets will be taking on the Vegas Golden Knights. Of course, 9 days from now will be the trade deadline. So on that 10th day, will Andrew Kopp and Paul Stastny be wearing Winnipeg Jets uniforms? I'm asking you to take off your Red Sox hat, put on your GM hat, and you let me know what you think Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to do with his two pending UFAs.
So this... If you need a crystal ball, I'm sure you can polish up Kenny's head and see if you can get something there.
Oh boy.
Hey, okay. I'm in no position to comment, but I can, you know, shot across the bow to a fellow baldy.
There you go. I've been watching a lot of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I love the talk that he always has about like the bald brotherhood. I love that stuff. So I know exactly what you're getting at with that. Boy, oh boy, I want your guys' thoughts on this. I don't know the answer to that question. And to me, the answer to it should be obvious. The Jets are I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm raining on the parade, but the Jets, if you look at the numbers, if you were a business and someone told you, you should, yes or no, should you make this business decision? And if the answer is yes, there's a 3.7% chance of it working out, but you're going to lose out on assets. Who would run their business like that? Nobody would, right? Well, that's where the Winnipeg Jets are. It's roughly like a 3.74% chance of them making the playoffs. So if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff and you take a look at asset management, and if you take a look at Paul Stastny, you take a look at Andrew Kopp and think these are players that we could trade and get assets to make us a better team going forward, then to look at the numbers and to run it from a purely business standpoint, it is a no-brainer to move those two players. It is a no-brainer. The thing that I think makes this a little bit more of a difficult decision is I think that you have a window here that we've talked about in the past with players like Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, and Connor Hellebuck. And that window is a guaranteed 2 years. Now, who knows? Maybe all three of those players would re-up and that's going to continue for a long time. I don't see that happening, but that's the guaranteed window. And Kevin Cheveldayoff has said, and I truly think that he still believes this, he said last year their playoff window opened and him conducting himself to build this team to win, not the playoff window, the Stanley Cup window, to win the Stanley Cup started when they re-signed Blake Wheeler. That was the moment they were all in and remained all in. I still believe that he thinks that way about this group. So the tricky part of moving those two players is what you'd want to do is you'd want to move them for guys who would make you better next year. But that's hard to do because if you're a contending team, you don't want to give up. If someone can help you next year, they can probably help you this year. So the Tampa Bay Lightning don't want to give away a player that is going to be good right now to the Winnipeg Jets because they need that player to try and win the Stanley Cup. That's what they're doing. So for the most part, if you're trading those players, you're trading them for assets, young prospects who are probably going to be good 2 or 3 years from now, draft picks that are very likely only going to be good 2 or 3 or 4 years from now. So you're talking about returning assets that are going to help you outside of the Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Connor Hellebuck window. And what I wonder about this is the response in the room from that group about you deciding to sell players that are highly valued by those specific players, by the core of this team, that are friends of those team, that are culture carriers in this team. And that it, essentially what you are saying in this moment is we are tapping out on this year. It's not happening and we're okay with doing that. And I just wonder if management is okay with sending that message to this group.
Let me follow up on that, Sean. You know, this group has put themselves into the position that they're in. So the leadership, the Wheelers, the Scheifeles, hold a significant part of the responsibility for the Jets being where they're at in the standings.
Couldn't agree more.
Why should anybody defer to what they want when they haven't put forth the effort, or not the effort, the results commensurate with continuing with the status quo? I mean, you know, in the first answer to the question at the start of this interview, we talked about the, my words, not yours, the arrogance that surrounds a lot of this team. To me, this year is the prime example of why there needs to be a leadership shakeup, why it can no longer be Blaylor's room anymore. I'm of the opinion that the captaincy needs to be removed from his jersey at the end of the season. There's precedent. It happened in San Jose, Joe where Thornton, the younger wave came up. They took it off Thornton. Thornton was still on the team, still a contributor, but wasn't as impactful, and his voice wasn't the driving one in the room anymore. I've seen no evidence based on the team's performance the last number of years that the status quo should continue. And that is on the leadership for the poor results to a large degree, I would say.
Yeah. So let's be clear about one thing. Blake Wheeler isn't Joe Thornton, and how those players would respond to being stripped of the C, I don't think would be the same thing. And I think that's the crux of what we're talking about here is what you are suggesting is a very public changing of the guard. And I think, hey guys, you've got your chat room in our show. We've got our chat room in ours. It is not entirely indicative of what all Jets fans think, but it's a cross section of what Jets fans think. And clearly what a lot of Jets fans think is exactly what you think, Drew, that there should be a change in the guard and a move on from this, that a player like Pierre-Luc Dubois should be carrying a C, a player like, Kyle Connor should be carrying an A. That's very understandable. And I get that. And I do think that there's precedent in San Jose for that happening. But I think this is exactly what we're getting down to. I think this all the time when people look at analytics and they think you build a team, based on you take the players with all the best numbers and you put them on the ice. That's how you build a team. That's how you put everything on. I've got time for that argument, but I've also got time for the argument that chemistry matters, right? And this is, I think, the crux of what we're talking about here. When I talk about a business and you know, making decisions based on numbers and business, that's talking from like a purely analytical mind. That's how you would handle that. But it doesn't mean that making those decisions wouldn't have an effect on the chemistry or upset the balance. And that's, to me, why there's such a big question mark here. I don't think there should be a question mark that those players should be moved before the trade deadline. But I think there is, because I think managing the chemistry and the balance in that dressing room is a major concern of Kevin Cheveldayoff's and Dave Lowry's. And that has a massive effect on how they approach moving those players if they decide to move them. I think one other thing we should point out to is, and you know, I don't mind giving shout outs to people on the other side or in our competition. I don't think there is anyone closer to Kevin Cheveldayoff than Darren Dreger from TSN. And on their broadcast last night, Darren Dreger is talking about, you know, the Jets keeping players like that as their own rental. And again, it sounds crazy to us, because why would you own rent? Why do you need to rent, period, if you're not going to be getting to the playoffs? And the numbers suggest they are not. But I'm telling you this right now, if Darren Dreger is saying that, I think he's saying that because it was said into his ear by the very person who is making the decisions here.
Right. I agree. Sorry, Ezzy, but you know, it would be a difficult conversation. There's no question about that. I agree with you wholeheartedly, Sean. It's time, from my perspective, for this organization to have some difficult conversations. They don't ever have difficult. You know, if they had dismissed Paul Maurice, that would have been a difficult conversation. Yeah. What happens? They don't have that conversation. He leaves on his own, whatever you want to say, whatever noise is associated with that is associated with that. It seems like this organization, by which I mean Mark Chipman and Kevin Cheveldayoff, refuse or aren't interested in having difficult conversations that might ultimately benefit this team. Now, the word might is a big one there, because you never know which way it's going to go, but it seems like the status quo doesn't lead anywhere forward necessarily. It just leads to more of the same, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, I do think they have hard conversations. I think that this is, as far as problems go, to pull off what you are suggesting is a doozy, right? Like, if it's a conversation, just because they haven't taken action on it doesn't mean they wouldn't have had those conversations. It's interesting, because I want to give credit where it's due. I gave credit to Darren Dreger. John Shannon was on the CJOB pregame show with me, and he said something that I just thought was fascinating and highly, like, you know, Chinese checkers, 3D, you know, hockey thinking. I was blown away, and I've talked about this a couple times, but we keep talking about the Calgary Flames in relation to the Winnipeg Jets, right? People keep saying the Calgary Flames were down in the dumps last year. They made a coaching change. They brought in a couple tweaks here or there. Now look at them. They're absolutely phenomenal. Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. That's one argument, right? And that the Jets are just that hair away, which I do think that both Mark Chipman and Kevin Cheveldayoff believe, that the Jets are just a hair away, the right ingredient away from competing. I think that they think that. John Shannon had said, if you want a comparable, why don't you look at the Minnesota Wild, the team that got rid of its two highest contracts and its biggest supposed culture carriers, and once removing them, found out that the culture was a lot better without them there. And I thought that that was a really fascinating comparison, and is kind of actionable and supportable by your thought process in this situation here. But they're going to be dealing with the ramifications of the cap space and the financial cost of that for years to come. They thought it was an important decision to make. It's paying off for them right now. Mm-hmm. But if you're the Jets and you go and have to make that same financial decision, because you can probably trade Mark Scheifele, can you trade Blake Wheeler in that contract? That may get tough. If you get into the situation where you have to buy that out, then that's going to cause issues for you for a number of years going forward. Do you feel that you can instantly remove those two players and have the success that we're seeing from Minnesota in the very next season? Like, Minnesota is an extreme example of taking a major risk and it working out. Doesn't necessarily mean that you just follow that blueprint and it will work out for you. So there's something to be said, I think, and you touched on it, Drew, like the loyalty that's in this organization, the fact that Paul Maurice left, he wasn't forced out the door. The fact that, you know, 11 or however many seasons we are into this now, with the results they've got, quite a few markets would have moved on from a GM with similar results. Personnel wise, the core of this team that's been together for a really long time have been given opportunities to take them to the next level. Other GMs would have tweaked these cores based on the results that they've been getting. The Winnipeg Jets really like to grow their own, maintain their own, and stick with their own. So I think it's kind of against their core values to do what you are suggesting. So not only is it a tough decision, but it's kind of asking, you know, a leopard to be, you know, a lion, and something that's entirely different from what they actually are. So it's really tricky. And make no mistake about it, I think that the Winnipeg Jets want to retire Blake Wheeler on the ice in a Jets jersey, put his jersey up on the rafters, and put his statue out in True North Square. That's what they want to happen. That's what that if they had their highest wishes, I think that that is their dream scenario. And there's a quote by Elon Musk out there right now, how wishful thinking can be an enemy. You want this to happen. So you make decisions trying to make that happen, but that dream really isn't there. And you need to start making different decisions. That's the wishful thinking for the Winnipeg Jets. That's what they would most like to see happen. So going in the opposite direction of that is a really hard departure from how they think in the current moment, I would suggest.
I'm just trying to visualize where the Blake Wheeler statue would be in relation to the Ken Weeb statue outside of Canada Life Center. But obviously they'll figure that out, Sean. But
standing over top of it, going like this. Yeah.
Wake up.
Lecturing them.
I wanted to ask you one more question about the trade deadline, because we know that Paul Stastny and Andrew Kopp, those are the two forwards that, you know, the pending free agents that everybody has their eye on. But do you think that, you know, Chevy and the management group for the Jets are considering any other moves? Like, I realize Nate Beaulieu, because of his obvious, you know, contract status, he's another guy. But I think you'd agree. I mean, you're going to get a late draft pick, if that, for Nate Beaulieu. But do you see the Jets moving anybody else? And specifically, a defenseman with some term on their contract. Like, I like Brendan Dillon's game. You know, scored the big goal against the Devils, jumped up into the play. Obviously, Nate Schmidt is a guy that's very well liked in the Jets room, but you're talking about guys that have term left on their contract. And when you look at that left side with Ville Heinola, Dylan Samberg, you know, you wonder, like, is Dylan maybe preventing one of those guys from getting a roster spot? Not saying that those guys are going to be necessarily in the same type of spot and role, but what are your kind of thoughts on that we might see, you know, the Jets move maybe one of those veteran defensemen?
This defensive situation, to me, it's like, guys, I don't know if you could ever figure out how to solve a Rubik's Cube. I never could. I could never figure it out. And to me, I look at that as being like a GM's Rubik's Cube. It's tough, because if you take a look, I do think the Jets need to clear space on their back end so that guys like Dylan Samberg, guys like Ville Heinola have an entrance into the league so that you can start playing those players. And I kind of think you need those guys there, because the Jets are going to need money, and bringing those players in on entry-level contracts is going to help alleviate some of your concerns. It's so tough, though, because if you take a look, the Jets desperately need the edge that Brendan Dillon brings to his game. And if you send him down the road, you're going to miss that. If you move a guy like Nate Schmidt, you're going to be moving one of your puck-moving defensemen and your highest-scoring defenseman. So that's a tough loss. And then you've got Neil Pionk, who signed long-term, came to Winnipeg, liked what he saw, believed in the organization, signed long-term. And we know that the Jets absolutely adore the players that do that, and they don't like to send those players down the road. And then Josh Morrissey did the same thing. And like, let's be honest with with this. Like Josh Morrissey, unless, I mean, no one is untradeable if you're going to get something phenomenal back. But like Josh Morrissey to me is close to untradeable. Like he's been phenomenal and he's a great leader. You know, I think that never mind Pierre-Luc Dubois, if the sea is going anywhere, that's who it should go to. Yeah. Absolutely phenomenal player. So if you move any of those players, it's you're losing something that you kind of need that you definitely need to replace and more in a return. The one to me that seems to be the most, if you take a look specifically at how each player plays, the one that would be most movable is Neil Pionk, because I think Neil Pionk has a similar game to Josh Morrissey, but Josh Morrissey's game is ahead of that. But the problem there is Neil Pionk is a right-handed defenseman and you've got a glut of left-handed defensemen coming up and on your roster. So you'd be moving your best right-handed defenseman if you did that. So they're in a really, really tough spot in trying to figure this out. Any other time, I would think, like this is what I would think. A GM in any other position or any other GM would be walking in here and saying, we need to move Stassi, we need to move Kopp, and we need to move at least one of our defensemen to create some space for some younger guys. We're going to go with a different plan next year, and we need to get both Dylan Sandberg and Ville Heinola into the lineup, so we know need to clear space for it. And that's how they would approach it. I just, the Rubik's Cube on the back end and the question of how the room responds to losing players like Kopp and Stastny, I think creates a massive question mark. And to be quite honest, must-see TV for Jets fans when it comes to trade deadline. How's that for a pitch for the trade deadline shows, guys?
I was going to say 9 days from now, Sean Reynolds, I'm sure, will be part of the Sportsnet trade deadline coverage, which I believe coverage starting at the crack of dawn on the various networks this year, as it usually does get earlier and earlier. It will undoubtedly be a fascinating next week plus as we see what the Jets do, if anything, ahead of the deadline. Sean, thank you for joining us this Saturday morning. Remember, curfew tonight is 10:30. Don't make me ground you if you're any later than that.
Thanks, guys. Hey, I always love coming on, and I just wanted to say you know, every time our show is on, we've got people popping in the chat room who've been sent by you guys, and make sure they're a loyal audience of yours, and they make sure you know that we know that you guys have sent them to us. We appreciate that. I've said it in the past. You are our brothers, not only in life, but in this online venture that we've been doing. And we appreciate you guys so much. I don't even think you know it.
Right back at you, Sean. And even though it's minus 35 today, we're only a few months away from, you know, being on that pontoon boat on Bird River. So we're
getting there. We have to go golfing this year. Drew and I have taken our friendship to the next level with him taking the piss out of me the way he has. But we're seriously risking losing what we have, Ezzy, if we don't get out on the golf course this time.
We'll get out there. You'll see how bad my golf game is, though. I can drink a lot, but you'll see a lot
you
of
you sound like my seven. Perfect partner, Ezzy. There we go.
Thanks, Sean. Be well, buddy. We'll see you again real soon.
See you guys.
There he goes, Sean Reynolds of Sportsnet and Kenny and Rennie fame. Let's go to break. When we come back, more on the Jets, more on tomorrow night's Jets Blues game, more on the trade deadline. Jeremy Rutherford joining us in the second hour as well. Saturday morning, we're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now, Saturday morning. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Reminder, tomorrow night... fourth straight day of Illegal Curve. You know you can't get enough of us. Post-game right around, I think, 8:45 or so. Give or take.
I would disagree with that statement, Drew, but continue.
Hey, Ezzy, they're still here. We're still here. Everyone's still here. That means we're doing something right and or people just enjoy getting together. Either way, in any event, tomorrow night after the Jets and the Blues, another key matchup for the Jets as they look to hold on to their playoff chances that continue to slide away. Fascinating interview with Rennie. I love chatting with him. I mean, he's got such a unique perspective, I think, on this Winnipeg Jets club. You know, I just don't know how you can run back the same structure, the same organization, the same team, the same leadership for another year if this season continues to go in the way that it's going. And there's no reason to think that it's going to rapidly change. I just don't understand how you can sell that. And I know it's not about necessarily selling it to the audience, but
well, it is.
There's a ticket buying public. Yeah.
And they're, they're not having sellouts, Drew. So, I mean, no. there's definitely an element. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to keep your players happy. But it's the fans who pay the ticket prices. The fans are the ones who are driving your market. If the fans are pissed off, if the fans react without going to games, well, I don't care if you've got 23 happy players. They don't mean shit because the fans are the ones who are paying their bills. So it doesn't matter.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, I don't really care if you're keeping your group happy and like, That's well good, you know, but the truth is if you have a terrible product that isn't getting it done in times past, I thought like what you said to Sean was interesting, right? You know, it's one thing about keeping the group happy, but, you know, rewarding them for what they've done. Well, this year they haven't done it collectively. Again, I'm not pinning this on one player with the exception of Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kyle Connor, who have been exceptional. There's a lot of blame to go around in this organization. So I don't think it's one person's fault, which means I actually think that they could start making some changes to actually get better production from this group. But again, so I don't think you need to blow it up. Like I said, like I suggested earlier in the show, if you just do a St. Louis Blues style, a few moves here, a few moves there, get some move, make some space, create some opportunity, then maybe you have something. But at the same time, you know, it's, you know, your point was if you're rewarding the team because they've done something this year, they haven't done it. So there's no reason to reward them. What are you rewarding them for? This idea of own, like my own rental. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. I hate it. It really is.
I agree. Like there's no own rental.
Regardless.
That doesn't make any sense.
It makes sense if you're, to be honest with you, it makes sense if you have 10 more points. If you're the Jets and and you're in a playoff spot, then to be honest, you're like, of course that makes sense. Of course it makes sense to keep Andrew Kopp rather than trading him. And then even if you're going to lose him this summer again, so you lose a second round pick that's going to have, like Sean said, it's going to have an impact in 4 or 5 years anyways. So what you do is you keep Andrew Kopp and you go on a run, you know. But the truth is, with this team, with the way they're currently positioned and how far-fetched it is for them to actually make a playoff run, to keep him for a, quote, own rental is lunacy. So I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. That's why I don't think – I think this conversation, I think it's good to question and have a discussion, have a conversation, if you will. But, I mean, I would suspect that the more fulsome dialogue between the three of us.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Drew's doing in the top left there. It looked like he was doing some interpretive dance.
Or something.
But I was doing my having conversations.
Okay. Dance. Okay, please never do that again, Drew. Thank you. But if the Jets don't trade Andrew Kopp, and then lose him for nothing, we know that that would just be, it would be unbearable for this organization, even though you have other players, like Dave mentioned, David Gustavsson, right? It's not justifiable, right? So yeah. If Andrew Kopp is to remain a Jet after the trade deadline, you're obviously, you know, hoping to sign him or will sign him. And that means that you're going to have to create cap space elsewhere, guys, because look at, we've crunched the numbers. It's going to be very tough to re-sign Pierre-Luc Dubois and re-sign Andrew Kopp without moving some money out, right? And the most obvious way you move that money out is one of those defensemen that's making a lot of money. And I would say it would be Brendan Dillon or Nate Schmidt. And obviously, I like both of those guys, so I'm not saying that. But, you know, this is a business, right? And they are going to have to make those tough business decisions, like Sean Reynolds said. And I think it ultimately comes down to, you know, when you're going into the offseason, like, can this group rebound and become an elite team again? And I think you're going to have to make more than just one or two moves. Like, I think you're going to have to address, you know, your defense and the fact that it's not good enough. And I think you're going to have to address your depth as well, because yeah, like Cole Perfetti's injury doesn't help. He would be in your lineup. He would make you more dangerous. But aside from Perfetti, and I guess Christian Reichel, but I mean, we're not going to throw in Reichel here. I mean, you're healthy. So this is the team that you have. And I don't know what would make you think that if the circumstances were different, that this team would be a Stanley Cup contender. Yes, Connor Hellebuyck, if he plays, you know, at a Vezina level, that would obviously help. But it's not just the goaltending. There's lots of other issues, you know, with this team. We don't know if Dave Lowry is going to be back as the head coach. So going back to what you were kind of saying, Drew, looking at this team at a macro level, I think there's a lot of decisions that are going to have to be made, including, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff's future with this team.
No question. Look, there's personnel decisions that are going to need to be made, and with some difficult decisions and some difficult moves upcoming. I mean, it's clear Kevin Cheveldayoff's going to make the moves ahead of the trade deadline, and then whatever the offseason brings in terms of his status with the team, and in terms of, you know, if there's other front office changes. But I truly do believe that leadership needs to be addressed within that room. Compare and contrast the answer that Josh Morrissey gave yesterday to a question from Mike McIntyre about Connor Hellebuyck, and the eloquent answer and the thoughtful answer and the, you know, to what he said about, really, this isn't on Hellebuyck. This is about the team defense. This is about better attention to detail. You need to, you know, support your goaltender better. Compare and contrast that to the answer Blake Wheeler gave, I believe it was, you know, last week, where he's talking about part of the Jets' struggles are that they're how young they are. What is he talking about? What is the captain of the Winnipeg Jets, who is the face of the team publicly, talking about? I mean,
well, they're not even one of the youngest teams, though.
There's no basis in fact to.
I'd have to check James Mertl's average age per team, but I'm pretty sure the Jets are around
middle of the pack. Yeah. Middle of the pack. There's no evidence whatsoever that supports what Blake Wheeler says. Now, part of your job as the captain, it's twofold. It's in the room, privately. Hard conversations among teammates and among players that we're not privy to and that we shouldn't be privy to. And then there's also the public face of things.
I think there's a little bit of action that takes place on the ice as well, Drew.
Of course, you know that. I mean, bugging you. I know you're bothering me, but that's okay. But you know, you look at what Josh Morrissey says. He treats the audience, he treats the fan base, he treats an answer with respect. You look at what Blake Wheeler says, and you're like, what the hell universe are you living in, dude?
I didn't understand that either, because I mean, a few years ago, you might have said that, right? Like when the Jets were clearly going with younger players, right?
Kind of pissy right now, Drew.
Well, and the thing is, like when you had Dylan Sandberg in the lineup, when you had Ville Heinola in the lineup, when you had, well, Cole Perfetti in the lineup, he's the youngest player on the team, right? Then you were a little bit younger, but still, I mean, this is not what you this isn't the New Jersey Devils, right? Like the Devils are the youngest team in the league, or at least they're one of the youngest teams in the league. So yeah, that answer to me was bizarre, given the circumstances.
This is a team that should know how to win. They've previously won. They went to the Western Conference Final, a large number of the players that are currently on this roster. The core of this team, the leadership of this team, with the exception of Pierre-Luc Dubois, went to the Conference Finals. And they were younger then. And now you're telling me you're older chronologically in terms of games played, up and down your lineup. In all respects, you are older than you were. But you're
like,
now,
Dave, is this metaphysical? Like what's happening with, I'm not sure Drew is trying to figure out like how time is constructed. Obviously it's spring ahead today, boys, as well. So
yeah, later tonight. Exactly. But I'm just trying to say, I don't know what he's talking about. And part of your duty,
I don't know what you're talking about right now, Drew.
Part of your duty, if you're the public face of this team, Dave, is that you have to, I believe, treat your audience with respect.
Yeah.
You don't have to like the questions. I don't care if you're pissy with the media. Fine. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. Jeff Hamilton's a big boy. He can handle it. But at least treat your paying customers with the respect that they deserve in giving an answer.
Yeah. I mean, look, Drew, I think it's a fair point. I don't think you can compare. I think Josh Morrissey is an exception. Yesterday was his 400th NHL game for the Winnipeg Jets, and I think he's an exceptional human being. I think on the ice, off the ice, I mean, I don't think they come much better than him. So, we're not fans of individual players, but you can't not be a fan of a guy like Josh Morrissey because he's just a good person, and you hear it. Like, I mean, I don't have other – I mean, I've covered him since he played for the Manitoba Moose, but – I don't think there's any question that in my mind, and it's funny because someone yelled at me yesterday on Twitter saying that Josh Morrissey is terrible. I'm like, have you looked at his numbers this year? He's not terrible. He's been so good for this Winnipeg Jets club. And he is the guy who, in my mind, should be wearing a C after Blake Wheeler. I don't think it's even a question. I don't think there's anyone who treats people with dignity and respect, period. End of story. Doesn't matter. Josh Morrissey isn't always happy. The Jets lose. He's not a happy guy. He's as competitive as they come. And you can be competitive, and it doesn't mean you have to be a dick. And there's a difference. And Josh Morrissey, I've covered him. He's been in the league since he was drafted in 2013. So we've been covering him for almost, 10 years. Obviously, there's some junior, there's some AHL, but like he's just consistently measured. Adam Lowry in that vein too. Maybe it's the Albertans in them. I don't know. But the reality is, those two guys, to me, and people like Pierre-Luc Dubois. Well, Pierre-Luc Dubois hasn't signed a long-term deal with the Winnipeg Jets. So there's no C for Pierre-Luc Dubois until he signs a 6, 7, 8-year deal. Then you can maybe think about that. But it doesn't matter anyways, because I like Pierre-Luc Dubois, and I could see him wearing a letter on his jersey eventually. But the next captain of the Winnipeg Jets has to be Josh Morrissey. It's not even a question, to be honest with you. I really don't see it.
Let me ask you this then. We were talking about with Sean, if we're, does that mean in your mind?
No, I don't think so. I actually don't think you need to take the C off of Wheeler.
So you want to have two captains?
No. That'd be funny. No, I just think you want to talk about hard conversation. Let Wheeler be the captain. Who gives a shit, to be honest with you? I really don't think it's that significant of a role anyways. But you need to reduce Wheeler's role. I think that's kind of the more important decision. That's the tough conversation they need to have with Blake Wheeler. And, getting guys like, here's a crazy notion. Maybe Nikolai Ehlers should be in that spot. Maybe Nikolai Ehlers, you could obviously replace Paul Stastny. But the point is that it's a reduction in what Wheeler's doing in terms of his time on ice. I think that's the harder conversation. And that's what needs to happen versus who wears the C. I mean, like, honestly, having to deal with bozos like us, like, who cares?
Well, I think they're connected with one another. I truly believe the Jets aren't going to consider that reduction, which I agree should happen, while they still consider Blake Wheeler a driver and a driving force on this team. I think that they think that he is still the same guy that they signed to that long-term deal and the same guy who was the point-to-game player and the guy who was sort of the heartbeat of this team, along with Dustin Byfuglien after Andrew Ladd left. I think they still think he's that guy when all evidence on the ice shows that he's not. He's not that guy night in and night out anymore. And that's not a slight to him. That's just a function of age and games played and the reality. He's just a step slower than he was when he was at his peak. But, you know, for him to acknowledge that and for them to lessen his role is one of those hard conversations. And this is just an organization that seems to be not interested, from my perspective, in having those conversations. And it's a hard conversation that they needed to have with Paul Maurice. And it's a hard conversation that they're, you know, I can see this team somehow, some way justifying bringing back Dave Lowry as this coach. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that, you know, is within the realm of possibility given the results we've seen with him as the coach, but they always seem to take the easy way out. And this offseason and this trade deadline and the next 3-4 months is a time where they absolutely cannot take the easy way out, Ezzy.
Yeah, I was just texting Rennie there, just thanking him for coming on the show. Look, I think, you know, it starts from the top. And, you know, it trickles all the way down to what we've been talking about with, you know, a couple of veteran defensemen. You have to look at it possibly moving. But, I mean, it depends. When you're talking about Dave Lowry, Drew, it depends if Kevin Cheveldayoff is the general manager. And, again, I'm not advocating for a regime change, if you want to call it that. But, I mean, I think for the first time ever, for me at least, it looks like it's a possibility that, you know, a new general manager is brought in, because I think that is going to determine who the next head coach is going to be if it isn't Dave Lowry. And it's going to determine, you know, if he does consider moving some veteran players. I'm not talking about Adam. I'm not talking about Paul Stastny and Andrew Kopp. I'm talking about moving, you know, yeah, Blake Wheeler or Mark Scheifele again. And I don't think it's likely. I don't think Scheifele and Wheeler are going anywhere, certainly before the trade deadline. But, you know, when you talk about Bill Guerin, for example, coming into Minnesota and trading Parise and Suter, I mean, that wouldn't have happened unless they had a GM change.
Right.
So I think, you know, yeah. So I think, you know, that's a big thing here. But look, ultimately, it comes down to the way this team plays. Even though you've got all the skill in the world with Ehlers and Connor, Dubois, Scheifele, the list goes on, Perfetti, Wheeler, it's the way that this team plays. And they have been inconsistent way too many times. Like, yes, it is a cliche, but that really has been the story of this year. The Jets beat a good team like Tampa Bay. Well, then they lose to a not-so-good team like the Islanders. The Jets beat a good team like the Minnesota Wild. They lose to the Chicago Blackhawks, or they lose to the Arizona Coyotes, or lose to insert any bad team that you want here, guys, right? So, I mean, that has been the story. So if this group has been that inconsistent all year long, it's not like this has been an abbreviated season or, you know, the Jets have been inconsistent for 5 to 10 games. It's been a season-long problem. So I think you have to look at, you know, a bunch of different areas of your team. You have to look at, you know, defense to start off with. I still don't think it's good enough. I still think you have to look at, you know, making a move or two there. And then I think you have to also look at, yeah, who is the right coach here? Is it Dave Lowry? Is it somebody else? And I don't have that answer. I mean, I could definitely hear an argument that it should be someone new, someone outside the organization, someone who currently, and then you also have to look at the entire coaching staff, I believe. Like, I don't think it's just the head coach, and I'm not going to say, you know, one person specifically, because I think the Jets do have a lot of talent on their coaching staff. But again, that I think will depend on who the general manager is. If it's Kevin Cheveldayoff, it's more unlikely that you'll see, you know, an entire coaching staff be replaced. But if it's a new GM, I mean, anything is possible, guys. You could see an entire new coaching staff, including the assistants.
Well, it goes back to, I think, Dave's comment at the beginning is, how do you sell that publicly? How do you sell the status quo or a relative approximation to the status quo? Again, we know what the attendance numbers are. We know what the season ticket base is, that it's less than what it was, you know, the last decade. We know that there is a sense, I would say, of apathy and discouragement in the fan base. And the fans shouldn't be your driving force with regard to personnel decisions, but they have to be your driving force when it comes to business decisions. And sometimes one factors in to the other. Now, if the Jets somehow run it back the same way and get different results, that would be unusual because, you know, past performance should dictate to some degree what future performance is going to look like, especially when there's no changes. Then things are going to be going to affect the pocketbook. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not for any means saying that the Jets are in financial difficulty, because I think that is a ridiculous argument that, you know, does not hold water. But empty seats are empty seats. When a plane takes off and there's five empty seats on it, that is lost revenue that cannot be recouped. When a game is played, a home game is played, and there's 1,000 unsold tickets, that is lost revenue that cannot be recouped, no matter how many times you sell out going forward. That's a factor the Jets do need to consider, and I think that is, you know, got to be part of the equation when it comes to this offseason, and it's got to be part of the equation when it comes to this Winnipeg Jets and how the organization is going to move forward. I don't believe they're going to buy out Blake Wheeler. I don't believe they're going to trade Mark Scheifele. It's just not their MO. It's not their modus operandi. But there needs to be some tough conversations. That, I think, for the first time, not ever, but more, it's as pressing as anything this offseason is those tough conversations, Dave.
I thought we were going to go to break.
Sorry, let's go to break in that case. Jeremy Rutherford, yes, there he goes. Jeremy Rutherford's coming on soon. We'll talk about the Blues ahead of tomorrow evening's Jets-Blues game in St. Louis. The road trip wraps up. The Jets looking to end it on a high note. It's Saturday morning. You're live with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. The Jets into St. Louis to face the Blues tomorrow afternoon. The Blues currently in Nashville to play the Predators, which allows us to welcome to the show Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic. He covers the Blues, a long-term friend of ours here at Illegal Curve Hockey. Jeremy, good to see you. How are things in Music City, USA?
They are a lot of music here. I don't know if you can hear it in the background, but they have a salute to military today. And it's a military band, so wearing the fatigues out there, and they're jamming away. And so hopefully found a spot here where I can talk to you and we can hear each other.
We can hear you. You sound great, Jeremy. Nice to see you. Thanks for joining us. You know it's a busy morning. Obviously, with the Blues and the Predators going to get started in about an hour's time from now. You know, Jeremy, I look at the St. Louis Blues team, and, you know, obviously a tremendous year so far, 33-17-7. But when the upper echelon teams in the league are discussed, I don't often hear the Blues being mentioned as one of those Stanley Cup contenders. Are they being overlooked league-wide, in your opinion?
You know, I think that they're a contending team. Are they a Stanley Cup contending team? I think they still have a little bit to prove. You know, the point that you make, when I look at some of the week-to-week standings in terms of, you know, people doing their power rankings, you know, I see them 13, 14, 15. It's probably about right. I think when they're on their game and playing as well as they can, I think they're potentially a top 10 team. But I think what they need to do is two things. They need to play better defensively. I think there's questions probably around the league about their defense, thus all the talk about the Blues adding a defenseman at the trade deadline. And then also the goaltending. I think everybody, when they think of St. Louis and you think goaltending, you think Binnington. And he was great on the Stanley Cup run, and the numbers haven't been there since. So I think if you're evaluating the Stanley Cup contenders, you know, you go straight to the net. And, you know, it hasn't been there from Binnington, but it has been there from Billy Husso. And I don't think that, you know, unless you're watching the Blues every night, you're aware of how good Billy Husso's been.
Jeremy, you wrote about the trade deadline. You just mentioned it for The Athletic, and I read the article, and it was a terrific breakdown of all of the different options. And
reading, you know, what you were saying about the defense, it seems like you're leaning towards more of a Ben Chiarot type of acquisition as opposed to a Jacob Chychrun acquisition. Like, do you see the, and I guess part of that, you mentioned this in the article, like the asking price for Chiarot is very high when you consider that, you know, he might just be a rental, right? But do you see the Blues maybe making more of a splash, or is that kind of what we're looking at, bringing in a veteran top four defenseman?
Yeah, it's a bit complicated because Doug Armstrong, in his history, he's been a guy who likes term. And even if he trades for a guy who's expiring, you know, he'll add the term to it. Like, there's conversations ahead of time, I suppose. And so you look at Ben Chiarot, and you guys would be more familiar with him than me. But, you know, he's expiring. And, you know, do you give up a first-round pick or an A prospect for, you know, Ben Chiarot? I think the answer in St. Louis and maybe even around the league is you wouldn't want to. But that might be the price. And so when you look at the Blues situation, look, everybody wants to break the puck out and get out of the zone as quick as he can. The Blues have a few of those types of players, Colton Parayko, Torrey Krug. But what they don't have is when they're hemmed in and the puck's in their zone, you know, it's Gabriel Landeskog just setting up camp. And they have nobody who can clear him out. Look, they got swept by Colorado in the playoffs last year. And you go back and look, and a lot of the goals are right in the net front, and they don't have anybody to combat that. So kind of an argument going on in St. Louis right now. Do the Blues really need, you know, somebody who can help clear the crease, or is it better to get the puck out? And, you know, I really do think a player like Chiarot, you know, I wouldn't give up probably the first-round pick for him, but I think a player like him would help this team a lot.
You know, Jeremy, you mentioned the goaltending in your first answer to Drew, and it's an interesting conundrum St. Louis is in, right? Because you've got five more years of Binnington at $6 million. And Ville Husso is a UFA after the season. Now, I'm old enough to remember in San Antonio when Ville Husso was the next up and coming and Jordan Binnington was his backup. So speaking of conversations, what's it like right now in St. Louis? Because it looks like Husso has kind of done what he was expected to do, you know, years ago. And is there kind of that tough conversation happening in St. Louis?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? In San Jose that year, Ville Husso was ahead of Jordan Binnington on the depth chart, as you know, and he wasn't playing very well at the start of the season. I think he might have had an injury even. Jordan Binnington, they needed a goaltender when Jake Allen wasn't playing well. And Binnington gets the call. And, you know, the rest is history. But in terms of what it looks like in 2022, Binnington's been really inconsistent. And Husso's kind of taken over. And I think, you know, to answer your question, they're just going day by day, game by game with this thing because of what you say. I mean, you have Husso as your guy. You know, I'm sorry, Binnington is your guy. For the next 5 years after this year at $6 million. So you're not going away from him. You can't trade a goaltender, you know, who's playing inconsistent with that kind of contract. And then on the other hand, you have Husso, who's a UFA and he's playing lights out. I think in a perfect world, Doug Armstrong would try to get him re-signed and make that, you know, so-called tandem moving forward, 1A, 1B. But if you're Ville Husso and you're playing like this and you're getting ready to walk into UFA, why in the heck would you know, sign up to potentially be a 1B guy with a contract of Binnington's size. So in the here and now, you know, I'm sitting here in Nashville. They're getting ready to play a huge game. I mean, this is a huge game between the Blues and Nashville Predators, and Ville Husso is going to be in the net. So they continue to stick with the guy who's getting the job done.
To your point, if the Predators were to defeat the Blues tonight, they would move within a point of St. Louis, and the Blues would certainly be close to falling back into that wild card spot as the logjam between the Blues, the Wild, and the Predators would continue to get closer. Jeremy Rutherford covers the St. Louis Blues for The Athletic. He's our guest this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Husso in net in Nashville this afternoon, presumably that means it's likely to be Binnington tomorrow night against the Jets, Jeremy?
I believe so. Yeah, and I should qualify that. Husso's expected to be in net. You know, Craig Berube gave us the old we'll see at warmups, but all signs point to Husso today, and we'd see Jordan Binnington tomorrow. And again, that goes back to this just being a massive game for the Blues and the Nashville Predators in the standings, so you're going to see Husso, and the Jets fans will probably see Binnington tomorrow.
I want to ask you about a guy, Jeremy, who's not actually in Nashville. He's currently banged up, Pavel Buchnevich, coming over from the New York Rangers this offseason. Sort of an under-the-radar move in that Buchnevich maybe doesn't get some of the headlines, you know, in New York. He was a little bit behind, you know, a guy like Panarin, a guy like Kreider. But on St. Louis, he's fit in seamlessly. Sometimes there's an adjustment period for a new guy coming into a team. Just under a point a game. What has Buchnevich meant to the St. Louis Blues this season?
Yeah, he's been big. So Doug Armstrong, you know, he had a little money to play with. Jaden Schwartz left via free agency, went to Seattle. And, you know, everybody in St. Louis, I don't know if you guys get this in Winnipeg too, they wanted Matthew Tkachuk, they want Gabriel Landeskog, you know, they want all those big ticket guys. And so, you know, Doug Armstrong, he works the phones, he does his due diligence, and he found two players who, you know, maybe aren't that upper tier, but he found two guys who could come in and really help this team, Pavel Buchnevich and Brandon Saad. Buchnevich has definitely been the better of the two. And, you know, he's younger and, you know, he's so versatile. You know, I talked to the Rangers' former coach, David Quinn, when the trade was made. And he said, this is a guy who is really hitting a spot in his career where he's going to take off. And so you look now, I think Buchnevich second on the team in goals, 19. I think he's tied for second in that department. Also points, 46. Gives him a little bit of feistiness. And he's become close friends, as you would imagine, with the other Russians on the team, including Vladimir Tarasenko. Might have even changed Tarasenko's mind about wanting to trade out of St. Louis, but the group of them, they get together really well, and Buchnevich has fit in both on the ice and off the ice in St. Louis.
And Jeremy, I have to ask, I mean, it's actually just, you know, fortuitous for me, but I wanted to ask you about Ivan Barbashev, because there's no shortage of players that we can ask you about. Like, you asked Dave and Drew, like, I really like Jordan Kyrou since before he came into the NHL, and he's obviously having the breakout year. He's phenomenal. Robert Thomas, I mean, we could talk a lot about Robert Thomas, but with Barbashev, I mean, he's a guy that's been with the Blues his entire career. He's having a career year, 18 goals, 42 points. I mean, Kyle Connor is often talked about as an underrated player. Every time I watch Barbashev, I just love everything about his game. Like, why don't more people talk about how good this guy is? I mean, and again, he's having a breakout season with 18 goals and 42 points.
Yeah, he really is. He's been great. I've liked him his entire career. I think the reason that people don't talk about him too much is because he's generally been a fourth line player for the Blues. Now, early in his career, you know, they tried him out middle six, but you know, he would spot in. But I think for the most part, he's been on that fourth line, and he was a huge part of that fourth line in the Stanley Cup run. Alexander Steen, Oscar Sundquist, and Ivan Barbashev. You know, I don't think the Blues win the Stanley Cup and beat Boston in seven games without that line. So Barbashev goes into Craig Berube's office this past summer and said, I need more of a role. I need to play, you know, power play. I want to play bigger minutes. I want to do that. And they said, well, if you're going to do that, you know, be ready and show us and earn it. And he certainly has. It's been his best year. You just rattled off the offensive numbers. He's been terrific. You know, as well-rounded as St. Louis is and as many good players as they have up front, Barbashev has been one of the better ones.
I know, Jeremy, I got it. You mentioned Vladimir Tarasenko, and at the start of summer, if you would have told me he had 52 games with St. Louis this season, almost a point a game player, I think you're a little crazy based on how things look. But here he is, and he seems to, like you said, he seems to have bought back into playing with the St. Louis Blues. Do you see him finishing out this contract? I think he's got one more year at 7.5 for the Blues.
Well, I said last summer when I wrote the story about him asking for the trade that he probably had played his last game in a St. Louis uniform, and here we are 57 games into the season. So I don't know if you want to value my opinion here, but, you know, I think things are going so well for him and going so well for the team that it's kind of on the back burner right now, the trade request. You know, does his relationship having Buchnevich around the success change his mind? It could, but from what I'm told, they're going to revisit the trade request in the offseason. And also, you know, this was a lot of people say, well, he's playing well. I mean, wouldn't he want to stay? You know, I just touched on that. But when you ask for a trade, you know, part of your plan is to play well. And so you don't ask for a trade, play well, and then say, well, never mind. You know, so I think that's still on the table. But like I said, that'll be an offseason deal. It's just so hard to make a move with a $7.5 million player in season with all these guys, all these teams up against the cap. But man, Tarasenko, well loved in St. Louis. I can't tell you how many nights there's been this year where he's been the number one star, and you know, they're chanting Vladdy Vladdy, 18,000 people. So, you know, I think they want him to stay, and maybe eventually things can be worked out. But with 1 year left on his deal after this season, you know, I think they could maybe find something where he gets moved in the summer.
Jeremy, it was a little over a month ago that Craig Berube signed his 3-year contract extension to remain head coach of the St. Louis Blues. You know, what does that sort of security, job security, and that extension mean to the Blues in terms of sort of continuing on with the culture and the attitude that both Berube and Doug Armstrong have brought to this team?
Yeah, it's a lot of stability. It really is. I mean, when you look at this Blues situation, you know, from afar, you got Tom Stillman is the owner, and he's been in place since 2000. You know, he came in as a minority owner in 2008, but I think 2012 he took over. So the stability is there with the ownership. Then you have Doug Armstrong. He just signed a 5-year extension early on the season. And then Craig Berube, now 3 years. I mean, so you look around St. Louis, and everything's in place to have the success. And the owners, even though it's whatever you want to call it, a small market, mid-market, they spend to the cap. And so you have a coach that's won the Stanley Cup. I know all the coaching staffs are dealing with COVID and roster tough situations, trying to put one together earlier in the season. Craig Berube and his group did a masterful job, and they've kept this group in contention all season. So, you know, I think it was obvious that they were going to re-sign Craig Berube and give him that 3-year extension, and now they get it done. And so now you have just a lot of cohesion in St. Louis. I think the number one thing I hear from players when I talk to them about coming to St. Louis as a free agent, they talk about that you can look around and feel like things are going to stay the same for a long time.
Jeremy, I wanted to ask you about the Jets. Obviously, you know, that's the why we brought you on, in addition to, you know, a good friend of the show, obviously. But Jets and Blues play tomorrow, and you mentioned the Blues have a really important Central Division game against the Predators tonight. But this morning, I guess, 11:30, if I can get it right here. But I wanted to ask you kind of, you know, it's always... Yeah, we're waking up still too, Jeremy. But, I mean, you know, when you consider... I always just find it interesting to get... a writer from outside of the market to comment on the Jets. Like, you know, we were talking about the trade deadline 9 days away and what the Jets might do. How would you kind of assess this Jets team from an outside perspective? Because I think, you know, for us, it's just been, you know, last night's game was just more of the same, just, you know, one good game, one step forward, one step back.
Yeah, no, I've always liked the Jets. I mean, you know, I've sat next to you in the press box there at the arena in Winnipeg and talked about them. Those have been some great games, right? You know, Blues and Jets over the years, always hard hitting. And gosh, it seems like you had a couple 5-4 games in there. And even the 2-1 games are, you know, just great to watch. So, you know, I've always admired the Jets. It's always surprised me a little bit, you know, to see the standings and to look at the scoreboard each night. Ah, they lost another one. You know, this is a good group of players. You know, I know there's been some changes with the personnel, obviously the big trade. And then the coaching change this year, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know what it's going to take for them to get over the hump. I mean, I feel like some of the parts are there, right? I mean, you have a couple of the top players in the league. I think when I watch a Kyle Connor and you know, the goaltending was there, you know, the past couple of years. I don't know how it's been. You guys could tell me this season. But I just feel like, you know, what's it going to take? I guess that's the general consensus. You know, you had the coaching change. Obviously, Paul Maurice said what he said in terms of, you know, message getting through. And you know, does the message take shape now, you know, as they've moved on? I don't know. All I know is that when I sit down for a Blues-Jets game in the past, I feel like they're a good team and maybe just need, you know, a bold move here or there to make things happen.
Well, that, Jeremy, seamlessly leads into my question, because the Blues made a bold move in 2018 when they traded a guy like Paul Stastny, who was very well-liked, but they were willing to make a slight retool. So it's kind of a two-parter. One, how are they able to sell that to the players in the room? Because that's usually, you know, not an easy conversation for them to have when they have to acknowledge, hey, this season isn't ours. But that's what they may be looking at here in Winnipeg. And how do they sell that to the fan base as well?
Yeah, that's what I think we were going through prior to this Blues-Rangers game a couple days ago. The Blues had gone on a 0-3-1 skid, and it was like, hey, is this really a cup team? It seems like they're more than a defenseman away. There are actually some people in St. Louis with a second-place team saying this might not be the year. This may not be the year. You know, maybe you want to hang on to these assets and these draft picks and, you know, the prospects. But go ahead and beat the Rangers 6-2 and score 3 goals in about 2 minutes and 36 seconds. And all of a sudden everybody in St. Louis is ready to trade the assets for some help. So yeah, I think it is tough to sell to a lot of fan bases that, hey, this isn't the year, let's move on. But look, you gotta be prudent with that, because, you know, let's just say the Blues were teetering a little bit, third place, wild card. Hey, you want to try to make the playoffs, you know, it's a similar situation to like what the Jets are in, but trade that first round pick for a guy, and then you're golfing after the first round of the playoffs, and now you're, you know, without that first round pick. And, you know, I'll apply it to St. Louis here really quickly. Is, you know, Doug Armstrong has kind of made his bed with these long-term contracts, Falk and Krug and Braden Shen and all these guys. Well, guess what? They're going to be 33, 34, 35 in the back half of these deals, and it's probably not going to be pretty. And if in the meantime you gave up those first-round picks, we're talking right now, 2021, 22, they would be developing into potential players at about the time that those contracts are going to look a little scary. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. I think you have to really evaluate things 3 and 4 years out is what a lot of GMs have to do. And I'm sure that's what a couple GMs around the league are doing right now as we get ready for this trade deadline in about 9 days.
Jeremy Rutherford covers the St. Louis Blues for The Athletic. Jeremy, I guess the silver lining about a weird 11:30 a.m. start is that after your post-game work is done, the time for some more shenanigans on Broadway. Can you let me know if you can find my dignity when you're walking up and down Broadway later on this evening?
Yeah. I'll be looking for my wallet so I can look down and see if I see your dignity. Yeah. And we have, everybody's kids are on a hockey team. And so we have a 9-year-old son who's on a team. And so we have the hockey parents down here for this trip. Not the kids, just the hockey parents. So you're right. Come about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock this afternoon. But there'll be some shenanigans, and I'm sure I'll drop my dignity somewhere too.
That's the way to do it, Jeremy. Thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy this morning's contest, and we'll read your coverage, of course, of the Jets and the Blues tomorrow evening in St. Louis.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Jeremy. Enjoy. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic joining us on the program. Always a great guest. He's been with us for, so many years now. He's going back way back in the archives of the Illegal Curve guests.
The St. Louis Post-Dispatch days.
That's right. Pre-Athletic, everything, you know, where it seems like everybody's from The Athletic. Jeremy is going way back. Always a great guest. So nice to speak and catch
Nobody knows the Blues better than Jeremy. I mean, he is so dialed in and tuned in. You know, we asked him about the trade deadline. If you haven't read his piece in The Athletic, he breaks it down perfectly. Look, I agree with your question or your idea, Drew. I think, you know, not enough people are talking about the Blues, right? Like, look, I don't think the Blues are at the same level as the Avalanche, and you know, we'll see what they do at the trade deadline. But I mean, when you've got Vladimir Tarasenko, Ryan O'Reilly, Jordan Kyrou, Pavel Buchnevich, that defense it's not maybe the best defense in the league, but if you're able to elevate it and augment it with a guy like Ben Sherrod or somebody like that, mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs. Ville Husso, Dave's right. Ville Husso has been terrific this year. And even though Jordan Binnington, you know, isn't at the same level as he was back in 2019, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a pretty good 1A, 1B combo there.
They know how to win. That's what I like about the St. Louis Blues and how they're built. You look up and down that roster, that's a team that knows how to win. That's a team that, you know, are they in
well
the same
class? Craig Berube is a really good
coach. Very good coach. Are they in the same class as the Colorado Avalanche? No. Probably not, but who is? But you know what? If you're St. Louis and you're looking at a first-round matchup against, you know, maybe the Wild or the Predators, there's no reason why you can't get through that. And then, you know, in a seven-game series or a best-of-seven series, it would be unlikely that you can beat the Avalanche. But, you know, stay in the fight.
You got to remember also injuries happen, right?
I mean, well,
think about it, the Avalanche are a perfect case study in injuries happening around the playoffs and how that can have an impact.
Yeah, you take Nate McKinnon out, Dave, or you take Gabe Landeskog out.
Yeah, that's my whole point. So it's like people say that and it sounds good, but you got to remember there's a couple of things and there's a couple of reasons why teams are so desperate to make the playoffs, because they make a lot of money. And so, and it's the bottom, right. Like, again, it's, you know, Sean talks.
Thank about you, money. Dr. Capitalism.
But it's true. I mean, it's important money for the organization. So organizations make millions of dollars for every home game that is played. They don't have to share it with the players. So that is a huge impetus for these clubs to make playoffs. You can say, well, what's the point? And like I just said, bringing it back around and making it about hockey. Like the truth is a guy like McKinnon gets injured in Colorado, a guy like Rantanen gets injured. Those are huge impactful things, right? So you take those kind of guys off their team. I'm not saying they're still not excellent hockey teams, because obviously they are, but it really does remove a big element. And then suddenly it makes them a little bit more, you know, it's a little less David versus Goliath, if you will, in that contest. And maybe in seven games, in a seven-game series story, you have a little bit more of an option or a little more of a chance.
Look what happened, Dave, last year with the Jets and Mark Scheifele. I really think that isn't a sweep if Scheifele plays in that series. Like, I don't care what anybody says. You take Scheifele off the Jets.
Sure.
I mean, they really didn't have much of a chance.
Yeah, same with Calgary in the play-in series 2 years ago. When you subtract one of your best players.
They lost two, didn't they? No, they lost. Didn't they lose, like, Laine and...
Yep, they did.
Against Calgary, they did. Yeah.
Yeah, they lost Laine and Shea.
That's true.
In the same game.
Yeah. I'm like, it wasn't one, it was two. Wow. That's why.
Speaking of Laine, he suffered a left leg injury last night against the Minnesota Wild. No word yet on the seriousness of that, but his return engagement in Winnipeg, the first game in Winnipeg since the trade
next Friday, right?
No, next Friday is
two Fridays from now. It's 26.
That's right. It's two weeks.
If you go to jets.nhl.com. They have a nice schedule.
Backslash schedule.
Exactly right. But anyway, so something to keep an eye on, because certainly that game has been marked on a lot of people's calendars. So hopefully it's not a serious injury, but it sounds like Aaron Portsline, our buddy with the Athletic, of course, says that the club is expected to know more later today about the state of the injury. So again,
About the Blue Jackets game in Winnipeg, Drew. I have them in my hockey pool where goals are worth two. So let's keep our priorities in check here. Let's keep perspective. It's about my hockey pool.
That's true. I apologize for your hockey pool and all the players on your hockey pool for not giving it the priority that I should have in that instance. You know, Jeremy was right when you asked him sort of about the idea of, you know, or what he sees about these Jets. You know, when the Jets play the Blues, it tends to be an entertaining contest. These are two teams that play well against each other. No love lost given the familiarity. So, you know, I think tomorrow's game should be a better game in that, because the Jets, for whatever reason, they play to the level of the competition. They tend to play up to that level, and the Blues are certainly up above them in terms of the standings and in terms of their performance. The Blues will be the second half of a back-to-back. The Jets will be 3-4 nights, so the fatigue factor is not one. There's no advantage one way or the other. The Jets are already in St. Louis. They have the complete day off today. No media availability for the Jets. It's a scheduled day off given the back-to-back that they just finished. Look, you can't afford to lose. Look, we know how few games the Jets can afford to lose. And Ezzy, you and I were talking about it after the post-game show on Thursday. Go look at the Jets' last eight games of the season. Seven of the eight, with the exception of one game against the Philadelphia Flyers, seven of the eight are against teams that you would have the bona fides to be a Stanley Cup contender. I think there's two against the Avalanche. I think there's the Hurricanes. Who else is there's the Golden Knights, I believe. There's Calgary. There's some tremendous teams that the Jets face at the end of the season. Now, will it matter? Likely not. I'd be surprised if it's not already done and gone by that point, but you know, the Jets certainly don't have any room for error if they want those last seven or eight games of the season to really matter when they're going to be facing against some of the biggest of the big boys in the NHL.
Well, in those games, I agree with you, Drew, this the schedule at the end, and by the way, they end the season off three games at home against Colorado, Philadelphia, and Calgary, but it's the four-game road trip.
That's
before the homestand.
Tampa, you've
got
Florida,
Tampa back-to-back, and then you've got the Rangers and Carolina. So you're right. If the Jets are still, you know, in the playoff race, you know, those last seven or eight games are going to be very difficult, but that might as well be a year from now, because all they can concentrate on is the upcoming game against the Blues. And I agree, I don't think there's going to be a huge advantage, you know, with the Blues playing in the afternoon, because the Jets have been playing a lot of hockey as well. But, you know, Dave, it goes back to, you know, what I asked Sean Reynolds, aka Rennie from Kenny and Rennie. Like, I really wonder if you see Ville Heinola, you know, inserted into the lineup. And again, I'm not taking anything away from Logan Stanley, because I think you guys would agree if Heinola comes in, it'll be for Stanley. But, you know, Stanley and Schmidt, I think they've struggled. I think you guys would agree with that as a deep pairing. Those guys have struggled. So you wonder if Heinola comes in. That's what I would be looking, you know, at. I don't know if they're considering starting Eric Comrie, you know, tomorrow night. I would expect Hellebuck to go back in, but Heinola is the one guy, because as you know very well, Dave, you know, it's been a while since he's gotten into a game here.
Yeah, and I think it's a curious decision why you recall him if you're not going to play him. I mean, I just don't understand it. It's just such a waste. I mean, I understand from a financial perspective, it's good for him, but you know, it's tough because it just doesn't make sense for a young player not to be playing games. And I don't know that Logan Stanley has done anything to really say he has a lock on that playoff spot. So if you're the Jets and you're thinking to yourself, why not give Heinola a shot? I mean, you need that injection. You need the puck moving. He's better than Logan Stanley in that regard. And look, Logan Stanley has his size and his physicality, but you know, there's a lot of instances where we're not seeing it used in a way that's, like we talked about yesterday, what was the biggest problem were the box outs. The Jets weren't, I'm not saying Villanueva is going to come in there, but you know, he's very adept at taking the puck away from the opposition. So I think there is a reason. Now, look, you know, one of the things that people have to realize though is that, you know, they talk about the Jets have to make moves. Well, they really don't though from a defensive standpoint, especially because those guys are still waiver exempt next year, right? A guy like Villanueva, a guy like Dylan Sandberg, they're still waiver exempt next season. So that pressure of, you know, needing to find them places, I know that there is that desire to get these guys into the NHL, you know, as there is for all prospects, right? Like, why aren't they in the NHL yet? We get it. They need to play in the NHL. It's not a bad thing. And I'm on record as saying the Jets will make a major mistake on the 21st if they don't make a paper transaction and have Perfetti, Reichel, and Veselainen all on the Moose, available to the Moose to go on a potential long run, because I think that's going to go a long way to helping these guys. The pressure of playing playoff hockey and winning and being in that culture with the Moose, I think it's way more important than being with the Jets right now. So I think that's going to be, I think it could be a huge dividend.
And they will. You know, you got to think they will. There's no reason at this
point. The only one, right, Dave? Yeah, Perfetti and Reichel for sure. Yeah. The only one who I think is a question is Veselainen. But I think actually, of the three players, I think Veselainen needs it the most. I actually think it could have a really good impact on him long-term getting that opportunity. So I don't mean to turn this into a maneuver.
Well, and you have you have a player like Adam Brooks who can fill that role on the fourth line, right?
So. That's, yeah, but I mean, again, it doesn't even matter.
You can fulfill the role of playing 5 minutes a game and doing nothing on the fourth line.
But the truth is, it doesn't matter. It's a paper transaction. You're not actually sending anybody down. You're just making a move that they're eligible to play in for the Calder Cup playoffs. They'll still be with the Jets for the remainder of the season. Maybe not Reichel once he's healthy, of course, because of cap space. But who cares? You know, just make these guys available, because I just think that is the key for this Jets organization. You have to think long-term, and the long-term success, the decisions are going to come on the right side, right? Johnny Kovacevic, he's not waiver exempt next year. Leon Gavanke, he may not be waiver exempt next year.
He's not waiver exempt.
Yeah. So those are your two. And it's funny. It's the guys on the right side who are Declan Chisholm, still waiver exempt. Villanueva, still waiver exempt. Dylan Sandberg, still waiver exempt. So your left side guys are actually all waiver exempt. So you'll be able to keep them on the Moose. You don't have a problem. And to me, Johnny Kovacevic is that guy who's going to fill that third pairing, seventh defenseman position. I think he's a good enough skater. He can handle it. He's physical. He's big. I don't see him getting in over DeMelo, Pionk, or Schmidt. But I'm saying if the Jets need to make a move, he could fill that role. He could, let's say you want to get rid of Schmidt's contract. I don't think that Johnny Kovacevic couldn't come in and be a third pairing guy with, I don't know, Dylan Sandberg, a guy he's played like 300 games with at the American Hockey League level. It's an exaggeration. Or even Villanueva, who he's played a lot with. So there are possibilities. Or even Logan Stanley, who he's played with. So there are opportunities for the Jets to make some moves. I just think that you have to give these guys that opportunity, these young guys, to play and try and develop that winning culture. Because they haven't really had that, right? They didn't get a chance in the playoffs last year. They didn't play in the playoffs the year before. So give the Moose, the young guys, that chance on the Moose to be in that winning culture and win games and play in meaningful games.
I regret not pressing the Moose call button, to be perfectly honest there. I didn't realize Dave was somehow hijacking for a Moose minute there, but that's okay. We always appreciate his insights into the Manitoba Moose. They'll be in action later tonight.
Trevor got pancakes.
Trevor got pancakes. That's good. I got some pancakes. Nice. I think not the last Moose game I was at, 2 games ago. So I have some pancakes still awaiting me that I'm definitely going to take advantage of, because as you can tell, you don't get
Drew, this. Who are you kidding? You ate those pancakes right after the game.
Well, no, Ezzy, you got a piece of paper that fulfills your pancakes. They don't actually hand out
pancakes. Ezzy would eat that piece of paper, though, Drew.
That's true. I was going to say, you don't get this pear-shaped body that I display without making sure I get my free pancakes into me. In any event, we'll have much more on the Moose. Dave will have the Moose covered later tonight. The homestand ends with the rematch against the Belleville Senators. If you haven't yet seen the shootout goal that the Senators scored last night, it's hilarious. It's also on our Twitter feed, @IllegalCurve.
I saw you guys talking about it. I caught a little bit of the post game show. I snuck in my phone so Naomi didn't see it, but I saw you guys talking about it. I agree. I don't know how that went in. Like, I've never seen a goal like that before.
Someone responded to me and said Matthew Perreault scored a similar goal years ago. I don't really remember, but
I vaguely remember him scoring one with a broken stick, but I don't think the shaft
like, you know, snapped, went, the same
like
way.
Snapped in the same way. Yeah, I recall him sort of saying that I think afterwards he said, yeah, it was actually with a broken stick, or it ended up being with a broken stick, but not to the extent that we saw in last night's Moose Senators game. So again, check that out on our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. If you
and our Instagram.
Quite, and our Instagram at Illegal Curve.
And our TikTok.
And our...
I did create an Illegal Curve TikTok, but I just didn't know what to do. Like,
And then you realized you're a 39-year-old male who should not.
Well, exactly. Like, I mean, TikTok. I think the average age on TikTok is like 16 years old. But like, I was trying to like post stuff, and I was like, I just don't know what
as
to
he
do.
Just kept writing, as he kept just writing, "Who do you like?"
That's also when Ezzy created the Illegal Curve Tinder, but we don't probably need to rehash those days. It's okay. In any event, a big thank you to everybody for joining us this morning here on the program. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and our friends at Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Illegal Curve Post Game Show, and of course, IllegalCurve.com. We're back at it. Talking about fatigue, what about our fatigue? 4 and 4 nights. Tomorrow night,
we definitely have a malaise, I'll tell you that much.
Tomorrow night, the Jets and the Blues, post game right around 8:30, 8:45 or so. Be back here on our YouTube channel. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends, tell your family members. The best place to be for Winnipeg Jets coverage is here on the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. Big thanks to Sean Reynolds. Big thanks to Jeremy Rutherford for joining us. An immediate replay available on the YouTube channel, and the podcast will be available for download just as soon as Dave Am finishes up his yeoman's work. Thanks so much for everybody joining us. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, IllegalCurve.com.